The Game Boy is turning 35 years old today in Japan. Does yours still work? Plus, is Target really getting rid of all physical media now, just like social media claims? Tonight is April 21st, 2024, and the Bobby Blackwell Show featuring your calls and chat comments is up next. So you would say even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Hello and welcome to episode 888. It's a special time. We only get these like one every 111 episodes or something. Hello, everybody, and welcome to an episode where we're eating good of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. We'll be doing both of those tonight. Welcome. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on episode 888, what are we eating tonight, if you're wondering? Nothing. I don't eat on stream. I'm not one of those people. So we're not eating, but you know, maybe you'll get a good lucky 888 jackpot, even though that's really 777. 888 works as well. Anyway, we do tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. That is where you can come and interact with chat directly, and I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat throughout the night. And we are a podcast, though, so if you can't be here on Sunday nights, I completely understand. VogNetwork.com/Discord is our low-traffic Discord server. It is not a high-traffic one. We don't ping, and you can actually submit stories that you want us to cover. In fact, both stories we're actually covering tonight came from the Discord, because they were posted, and then there was actually a story I posted. I'm like, hey, I'm going to talk about the story. I'm not tonight talking about that. So... Fifth Dream says 8 is great. I'm old. Yes, we will. There's other old things going on, old things today, especially. And so why don't we go ahead and talk about that? The Game Boy. Remember the Nintendo Game Boy? 1989, I believe, is when it came out. April 21st, 1989 in Japan. It came out in North America a couple months later. And it revolutionized handheld gaming. I was even watching something earlier that, like, the Game Boy is the precursor to, like, all of our handheld electronics. Because, like, when kids embraced the Game Boy, that led people to be able to get... We started seeing PDAs, and which is not public display of affection, but a personal data assistant, which Palm Pilots were kind of the Kleenex term, the brand name term of that, but there were other PDAs as well, all leading up to the iPhone and then now what we have in our pocket. But the Game Boy paved the way. E3VL says Tetris paved the way. Yes, in America. The Game Boy did not have Tetris in Japan. They didn't have, it was like Super Mario Land and then like baseball and, you know, they had a and Alleyway, I think, was their break. I don't know. I had it up. I don't have it up in front of me, so I'm trying to do this all from memory from things I read just today. So it didn't have that in Japan. It wasn't until Tetris came into America, and there is a dramatized version of that story on Apple TV, which is a fun little movie, Apple TV Plus. Yeah, Alleyway was the breakout light. And E3L said, thought Japan had the Game & Watch. Oh, we had the Game & Watch, but it wasn't you couldn't change out the game. So the Game Boy was the first handheld device that you could have interchangeable cartridges, because that was a big deal. That was a big thing. I actually have mine here. Funny story. I actually don't have any of my original games. I am only slightly bitter about this because this is and we're getting into childhood trauma here, because this happened in the 90s. But you know, I actually had a I had a case of my game that held my Game Boy and Game Boy games and things like that. And so I'm holding it up on stream. It's black, so you can't really see it all too well. So I had this case. This is the actual case that I had in 1989 or 1990 when I got the Game Boy. And it was in my room. And during high school, there was a group project, and we actually did the group project at my house. A couple of days after that group project, I'm like, oh, hey, you know, I want to play some Game Boy. So I picked this up. All the games are gone. The Game Boy is still in it. Also, the Game Boy Light that I had, there was a light attachment that you could get. That was gone. The instruction manuals were still in here. But all the games were gone. The Game Boy itself was still in there. But, and like my four-player adapter, it was all gone. So I tell my mom this. And she's like, no, that didn't happen. Your room's messy. You just lost them in your room. Go clean your room. I don't want to hear about anybody's taking your games. You obviously lost them in your room. And me in my head was like, but they were all in this case, and now they are no longer in this case. And she was insistent that they had all of them magically fallen behind my bed, fallen in the mattress, fallen somewhere. No. So she wasn't going to lift a finger. Because obviously I had lost them, and I'm trying to blame the nice kids that came over and were very nice and, you know, to do the school project. And then I actually went in the next time I had gone to our local video game trading place, I found all my games in a row under the counter. And I said, oh my God, like those were the games that got stolen from me. And he's like, yeah, sure, kid. Right. Whatever. And so E3VL asked, did you put your name on them? No, I didn't. Because I didn't think I needed to. Because, like, I don't have siblings. I was an only child. So, like, it's not like I was worried about any of that. But, yeah, like, so he's like, oh, this kid's trying to scam me out of these games. I'm like, well, can you at least tell me who traded me? He's like, no, that's private information. That's privacy. I'm not going to betray the privacy of my customers. Because who knows what you're going to do with them, because he didn't know who I was. So that is how I lost all my original games. I have since, but I had the instruction manual, so I know exactly what games I had. The ones I actually liked, I did wind up rebuying used later. But the originals, all gone. And Dark Decea says, labeling your games, hindsight is 20/20. It doesn't actually matter, because even like if I had just put my initials, he could have been like, how do I know those are your initials and not somebody else's initials? Like there are more protections now for pawn shops and about stolen goods at pawn shops and stuff. But like my parents remember, we're not going to go down this route of saying that they were stolen goods. Like I had lost them. So I don't have all my original games, but I do have my original Game Boy. And I've got it right here. And I was going to ask, you know, if yours still worked or something. So I pulled out one of my favorite game, which, by the way, was not Tetris. It was not Super Mario Land. It wasn't even Pokemon's, because I do have Pokemon Blue. But it wasn't even that. No, my favorite game was Revenge of the Gator. It was a pinball game. Which is funny, because I graduated from the University of Georgia, and gators eat boogers, but Revenge of the Gator was my favorite game. So it was the first one I bought back. After, not from the place that there was. So this is not my original game. I got it, like, later. So I'm going to put it in my Game Boy, and I'm going to see if this thing works. So here we go. Oh, no. Oh, well. I mean, it's... No. Okay, well, I thought I was kind of expecting it to work and that stuff. So, yeah. Oh, well, that would do it. Not having the batteries would make it not work. So, okay. Actually, here, I think I've got some batteries up here. Just get some batteries in here. There's one battery. Here's two batteries. How you doing, everybody? It's Sunday night. I should have done this. I should have tried this ahead of time. Got another battery in here. All right. Let's see here. Now. All right. Take two. Take two. Here we go. Oh, wait. Hey, look at that. Yay. There it is. So, yeah. I got my pinball game. Let's see, how does it... Yeah, so it's actually, the screen's in good shape. I mean, it's green, but it doesn't have any of the lines that I've seen other Game Boys have, like where there are like dead lines on some of the Game Boys that I've seen. But, yeah, it's very difficult to see. I have key lights, so that's why people on the stream can see it. Yeah. So my Game Boy still works, thankfully. Yep. All the buttons work. We're all happy. We're happy here. Although I would probably never play on this. I'd play on something different, but mine still works. Which goes to show that, like, especially back then, Nintendo, when they made things, they were tanks. Because, like, this thing is probably 35 years old. This one. It still boot up. Like, once I actually put batteries in it, because I'm a dummy and didn't put batteries in it before the show. Once I put batteries in it, it worked. And, like, there were even things about, like, you know, a house fire. And the Game Boy still worked after the house fire. There was a story because of we were in the Gulf War conflict. It was in a war zone. And it got shot up, and it worked just fine. So, yeah, it's a fun little system. Obviously, it's better when you can see it. I have the Game Boy Player for the GameCube. Actually, in here, I have the Game Boy Color. I had one of the Game Boy Colors. It's a little dusty, and it has Super Mario Land in it, but I have a Game Boy Color. And then there's, you know, Game Boy Advances and stuff like that. So anyway, yeah. So happy birthday to the Game Boy, in Japan at least. It'll hit 35 in America in a couple months, and we'll celebrate this again, with everything out again, and I'll do the same gag again, and nobody's gonna remember that I didn't put the batteries in. Fifth Dream says, I modded my Game Boy Color with so many accessories, a light, a battery pack that was also a handle, wanted a magnifying screen, but I never got one. So the Game Boy Light that I had was the combination magnifying screen and light. And it was taken. Like, that was taken, and that was something I never did find again. But it was great. But yeah, that was taken away, because I used it a lot. And thankfully, like, these batteries are not, they're not rechargeable. Like, these are AA's that I had sitting around, so... That's the thing about, like, the newer systems is, like, you know, your PSP's battery is probably exploded by now, because they're all the lithium ones that are rechargeable. And I kind of like being able to just pop in new batteries. And that's not going to be a thing anymore. I mean, hell, plugging anything in is not going to be a thing anymore into an outlet. I've actually run into, this is a non sequitur a little bit, I've actually finally run into the problem of, I got something in the bathroom that I use, and that is something you have to charge, right? And it comes with a USB charger now. The one that I was replacing didn't. It had a charger you plugged into the wall, but now it's a USB charger. And I have finally come to the point where I have now repurposed all those old AC adapters. The reason they don't pack the AC adapter anymore when it's a USB charger is because we all have so many AC adapters for USB that we don't need to pack them in anymore. We all have them all. Well, I have now repurposed every single one I had that now I had to go find. I had to go buy an AC adapter because I ran out of all of the ones that I supposedly have been stashing from other things. So I'm finally running into that part, and nothing's coming with AC adapters anymore. So it's all like a separate transaction now. So, yeah. E3VL said I had an AC adapter for the Game Boy tethered to the wall outlet because parents didn't want to buy batteries. Yeah, so they've got... It was one of these ports you could plug it into, or it would go in here. Yeah, there was a lot of accessories for these. So, I did mod my Game Boy Advance with the Afterburner mod, which had the light, because the Game Boy Advance didn't have a light either. But I never modded the original Game Boy. So happy birthday, Game Boy. So what was your favorite game on the Game Boy? And how about this? Okay. What was your favorite game? And if your answer is Pokemon, what was your second favorite game? And if your second favorite game is also Pokemon, like, keep going. Like, if it's Pokemon, great. So what was your second favorite that wasn't Pokemon on the Game Boy? Mine, I already said, Revenge of the Gator was mine. It's the one that I still play today when I'm like, oh, hey, a bunch of Game Boy games. Let me find Revenge of the Gator and play it. E3VL says Pokemon Blue and Tetris. So there we go. And Tetris, that was a cultural phenomenon. That's really what sold the Game Boy. So we've got another Tetris. Mike Def says, from the OG Game Boy, definitely not Pokemon. Those games are a true mess. Dark Tetsuya says, I was fond of was Hyper Load Runner. It was a neat platformer and puzzler, but you could build your own levels. Here we go. Fifth Dream says, red, blue, yellow, gold, silver, crystal. So my seventh favorite, Pokemon TCG. Rob Roberts asks, is Pokemon Pinball a Pokemon game? Yes, it is. It says Pinball in the title, says Pokemon in the title, but it was also, it was a good game. So, I mean, I can kind of overlook it, but Mike Dev says, I'm really fond of Super Mario Land 2. Questbuster says Tetris, but I think I had a Terminator 2 and a Castlevania game on mine. Might still have them somewhere. So those were some good games. They also, the interesting thing about like the Game Boy stuff is they even released, because we didn't have PDA, personal data assistance, they actually did have like calendar games or memo games and like cartridges that were like for lifestyle stuff, like non games, but like you could store data, you could type with the buttons and put things in. And so there were companies that were trying to do that. Productivity apps. They had productivity cartridges that were really unwieldy to use, but they were on the Game Boy, and so it made it cool. ZenMug11 says, I didn't have a Game Boy at the time, but my friend loaned me his. It had a maze game with some cat kids that moved boxes. I don't remember the name, but it was fun and my favorite next to Tetris. So when I did get a Game Boy Color, and my all-time favorite game for that is Spy versus Spy. Orange Wright says that game was Cat Trap. Is the game that he was thinking of. Fifth Dream said, played a lot of Tetris, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Castlevania, and Super Mario Land, and the Saga games, branded Final Fantasy here, played those a ton. Yeah, the Final Fantasy Adventure games here were from the Saga series. So, cool. Lots of good stuff. What else do I have? I had Tamagotchi. These were afterwards. Oh, Donkey Kong Land. And I've got Link's Awakening from Zelda is in here. Monopoly for Game Boy. And so, oh, Ken Griffey Baseball. There we go. And Pokemon Blue. And then I think, there's a lot of, dust in here. I think I still, these are all the original instruction manuals from the games that I had. So, Revenge of the Gator. Let's see here, Tamagotchi. So, I've got instruction manuals for the games that I had or have now. And let's see if I've got any of the manuals for the ones that were stolen. Okay, yeah. So, the games that I got had stolen. So, I apparently had baseball, tennis, a four-player adapter, WWF Superstars, Bo Jackson, two games in one. This had both baseball and football, because Bo knows. Dr. Mario, Super Mario Land, around rebuying, F1 Race, and Alleyway. So those were the games that were stolen. And I only rebought a couple of them. So, like, I have Tetris again. I have Super Mario Land again. Not bitter at all. let's move on. Let's move on to, I want to talk about some viewer comments from previous episodes. So you can go into our Discord server and leave comments on previous episodes. And we actually had one about virtual reality. So it's time for people to get their drinks out. Because I had made some comments a couple weeks ago about how I don't want, you know, the visual fidelity from a headset that's not tethered is not going to be as good as a headset that is tethered to something. Because I was talking about this is why the PSVR 2 is tethered to the PS5, so the PS5 can do these, and you're not going to get that on a Quest. And I was corrected, because there is technology now to make it so you're still not tethered. Now, MameFan wrote that listen to the latest podcast, Valve Index tethered to a PC, which is what I'm running, is definitely not better graphical fidelity than the Meta Quest 3 wireless to my PC via virtual desktop with my Wi-Fi 6E router that's in the same room. I don't even touch my Index anymore. So that's a lot of qualifiers, but it's also something that I didn't know. I've had a Quest on my face, but I've never used it with all of the qualifiers of essentially using virtual desktop to run something from your gaming PC to the Quest, but also remember you have to have a Wi-Fi 6E router, not a 5 router. So it's got to be that, and it's got to be in the same room for it to work. My Quest 3 is the only device in my house using 6 gigahertz. So Wi-Fi, you can have 2.4 or 5 gigahertz, and then now I've got this, guess they've got a 6 gigahertz band. So there's no interference with anything else. If you're using 5 gigahertz, you might have interference from your own devices, your neighbors. 2.4 gigahertz would be unplayable. I go back to a cord if a I would go back to a cord if a wired HMD, which is a head-mounted display, it's what we call VR headsets, came out that looked way better than Quest 3 with virtual desktop, but I don't think that exists yet. Never tried a big screen Pimax Crystal or Varjogo, so those are other VR devices. I went from a wireless Vive to an Index because the Index looked so much better than the Vive. The cord never bothered me either. I played standing with a cord all of the time, as my main fan channel shows. So go follow Mame-Fan over on YouTube for that. I'm a physical turn guy, no matter the HMD. Still don't own a PlayStation VR 2. Not enough games interest me. And E3VL says expensive setup there. Yes. So that's a lot of qualifiers, but I'm glad that it works for those that are. And I mean, if you're going to have a beefy gaming PC, then you're going to be able to get a Wi-Fi 6E router. So that's great that works. A lot of people that use the Quest use the Oculus Link cable or metal. Do they call it Oculus Link? Because I think they still use the Oculus name somewhere. But there's a Link cable that goes to your PC. And the reason we were talking about this is the PlayStation VR 2, they are talking about, or they're investigating getting the PlayStation VR 2 headset to work on PC, which would be one cable, because it plugs into the USB-C port on the front of your PlayStation. That's the only cord that the PlayStation VR 2 has. And so it would plug into a USB-C port on your desktop. But there's a lot of people that are like, wireless or bust. I don't want wires. And I was saying, it's, you know, you're going to get better experience with wires. Because if you have no wires, then really it's all got to be processed. All the video has to be processed on your face. And that will make things a little bit heavier possibly, and cooling that, because it's going to run hot so it doesn't burn your face. That's a technical challenge. It's not an impossible technical challenge. It's just a technical challenge. Whereas if you have the graphics being done from a separate system, like a gaming PC or a PlayStation 5, and you have a cord going through, then it's going to be a much better experience. A lot of people are like, I must have wireless. It's so freeing. And I'm like, but you're not really walking around outside of a specific area. So, you know, one cord's not too bad. But I understand some people probably turn around and may trip over it. So I get it. But it's good to hear that if you have all of the right pieces in place, it is possible today to get a wonderful experience wirelessly using your gaming PC as the driver, as the video driver, instead of the thing on your face, and that there's no wires anywhere. All right. So we did have some news articles that were posted to us from our Discord that were interesting for this week, and it's more about the loss of physical media. Did you like how at the beginning of the show I was like, hey, this thing turned 35 years old, and I'm holding up my Game Boy again? And then I took a game that I had, and I put it in, and once I put batteries into the Game Boy, the game played. Boom. Done. Remember those? That? Yeah, kids today are not going to have that. Because we've talked about how physical media is getting phased out, not only by retailers, but also by publishers. Star Wars Outlaws by Ubisoft is actually going to require an online connection and connection to a server to install and play the physical version of the game, which means once that server goes down, even if you have the physical copy of the game, you can't even play the 1.0 unpatched version because they left off the disc, the executable that starts the game, and that gets patched in. There is a possibility, there was a tweet earlier that said, hey, Target's not going to sell physical games anymore, and Target has responded. IGN reports that retail chain Target has responded to the recent reports claiming that it will stop selling physical media, revealing that it will continue to sell physical media but will limit the number of copies it sells in its retail stores. A Target spokesperson said told IGN that the retail chain will be, quote, transitioning the limited assortment of DVDs, unquote, they carry in retail stores. The official website will still offer thousands of titles for consumers to purchase. Though the retail stores are pivoting to a more selective approach in what physical media to carry, the spokesperson said told IGN they would offer select DVDs in its stores when it's a new release or during key times throughout the year when they are more popular, such as Black Friday or during an anti-Prime Day sale. So the spokesperson said, quote, based on our guests' shopping patterns and broader industry trends, we're transitioning the limited assortment of DVDs we carry in our stores to Target.com, where guests will continue to find thousands of titles. Moving forward, we'll offer select DVDs in stores when they are newly released or during key times throughout the year when they are more popular, like for gift giving during the holidays, unquote. The spokesperson also confirmed that this new policy will not impact physical games sold in its retail stores. This will only impact the physical copies of movies and TV shows. And I'm adding this, for now. The problem also is the game companies are pivoting away from physical media. So there's less physical product anyway for them. But also, like, they don't send out as many copies. It is not as guaranteed anymore that you'd be able to walk in and get a game. Like when Final Fantasy VII Rebirth came out, there was no guarantee you could walk into Target on launch day and get the game because they might have already sold out of the three copies they had. E3VLS asks, DVD only or Blu-ray also? It's they're talking about movies and TV shows. So when they say DVD, they mean all forms of DVD, which they consider Blu-ray to be a DVD. And E3VL says Microsoft gave up on physical. They haven't given up on it, but they are rethinking their strategy. And that's why there's actually even like there was something like Microsoft actually opened up a game preservation wing to determine how they can do game preservation in the age of more people going digital. But I think the problem is Xbox players aren't buying physical games. So why should they spend all that time releasing physical games? And that's the thing. It's like if we, and I say we is just like the general royal we of the gaming public, if we stop buying physical, yeah, they're going to stop making them. Yeah, they're going to stop stalking them. And then they can just take things away. It's really more in the movie and the TV show space is that, you know, there are TV shows we've lost because they never released in physical. And then, oh, darn, that streaming service that owns it, they just took it offline. Hope you have a Plex server. So, yeah, so Target is not yet removing all of their physical media, but they will, especially as the new consoles come out. By the way, there's a PS5 Pro. They've started working on the PS5 Pro the day before the PS5 released. It's not news, but apparently it is. The next Xbox Series X revision, that's coming. And neither of those are going to have a drive. Neither of those are going to have an optical drive. And so as that happens, less people are going to buy physical media because they're not going to have a console that has a physical drive to do it. I'm going to miss the physical media when it finally goes because it's going to go. It's going away. E3BL says that Sony should have put resources on the PlayStation 6 rather than the Pro. Oh, they're making the PlayStation 6 as well. They started on the PlayStation 6 also the day before the PS5 released, or probably the week before or something like that. So yes, they are working on the PlayStation 6. Xbox is working on the next Xbox Series X. Nintendo is working on the Switch 2 and has been for a while. S. Jared and Matt says, I haven't seen a CD in ages at Target. Seen plenty of vinyl there, though. I do see CDs on the end cap with all the vinyl. So they have some, and it's always like new release stuff or very, 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 very popular people who date football players. Their CDs are there, too. Vinyl, this is the interesting part. Here I go on the music side. But apparently, a lot of kids nowadays, one of the big things a lot of kids asked for at the holidays this past year was music on vinyl, because it was such a novelty for them to have a physical manifestation of the music that they had been listening to on their streaming devices. It was something they're not used to. And so it was a big novelty. So they really wanted to have music that they could hold. Because most of they are like, oh yeah, no, I have music on my phone. I'm on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever I use. But having something I can physically hold, that is something that really interests me. That's amazing. And so they all want the vinyl. And so we're seeing a resurgence in vinyl. Target carries vinyl, but they only carry a couple CDs. They carry way more vinyl records than they do CDs. Fifth Dream says, kids missing out on vinyl. Now they're obsessed with songs slowed down and or sped up. And Questbrush says, there was an old computer I remember from There was an old commercial I remember from years ago where parents gave their daughter a camera and she held it up like it was some sort of alien artifact and is like, what is this? I mean, a lot of kids today that aren't in gaming, a lot of kids today don't know actually how to use a computer. I'm not talking about the kids who game, okay? I'm talking about other kids that, you know, they know how to use a phone, but they don't know how to type, you know, because they've never really had to. They type with their thumbs. And some kids don't even understand how to use the web. They know how to use apps. And so they don't even understand the web. And even like some like console gamers, I remember like doing stuff with Games Done Quick. And, you know, like when they were all online having to use OBS, that confused some of the younger generation having to figure out OBS because they didn't stream. And all they do is they play their games. They speed run their games. It's kind of interesting that we stopped teaching computer literacy in schools because all the kids just inherently knew the technology. And now the younger kids don't actually know the technology. They don't know how any of it works. It's going to be really interesting as that generation grows up how they're going to take to using things that are not a phone, because they absolutely know how to use the phone and they absolutely know how to use apps on their phone, but the phones are made in such a way that you don't tinker with them. So they don't know why it works. They just know that it works and that's all they care about. Whereas, you know, people, you know, even millennials, you know, had to, you know, tinker with the computer. They had to learn how to get things to work. And so they had a little bit more of knowledge of technology. But now, you know, and so we stopped teaching it because they're like, well, all the kids know this. So we don't need to teach how to use a computer because all the kids already know how to use a computer. And now we have a whole bunch of kids that don't know how to use computers. Not the gamers, though. The kids that would be the type to be here on Twitch, listen to this podcast, they do know how to use computers. It's not them. So it's not everybody. And it's, you know, I don't know if it would even be the majority, but there's a lot of technology illiterate kids because we just assume they're born with it. Michigan says it's the same concept of cursive writing. Kids today can't read or write in cursive. It's because we stopped teaching it. It's literally because we stopped teaching it. It's not that they're incapable. It's just we have decided that is not something they should learn. We as a society have decided that's not something they should learn. E3VL says, we are the best generation, grew up with everything. Every generation says that. I will tell you that the generation, the kids that I'm talking about, in 40 years are going to call themselves the best generation because they grew up with everything. So everybody says that about their own generation. So, and I don't know, E3VL, you and I might be from a different generation. I don't know. Everybody has said that their generation was the best. And it, even if they, you know, say they grew up with everything they wanted, is what they would say. Because you can probably, you know, some generations that, you know, like, especially like the silent generation that grew up during the Depression, they probably were like, we've persevered. We learn how to persevere. That's why we're the greatest generation. They actually are called the greatest generation because they're the ones that won World War II. There's a great Douglas Adams quote that I want to bring up. Douglas Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And this is something from, it's from Hitchhiker's, from the Hitchhiker series. I love this quote. Douglas Adams, quote, "I've come up with a set of rules that describe our reactions to technologies. One, anything that is in the world when you are born is normal and ordinary and is just a natural part of the way the world works. Number two, anything that's invented between when you're 15 and 35 is new and exciting and revolutionary, and you can probably get a career in it. Number three, anything invented after you are 35 is against the natural order of things." Sound like anybody you know? Are you in this picture and you don't like it? As Jeremat says, so long and thanks for all the fish. That's right. E3VL says, no, I embrace new tech. Anybody you know is like that? Because I do. I'll go back to this, the Douglas Adams comment. The inability for the people that I graduated high school with to even understand why anybody would watch Twitch for any reason embodies that quote. So it's not about you. It's not about me. You know, because I embrace new technologies, because there was somebody who's like, oh, whenever I see a QR code, I blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, it's way better than typing in the URL. But the QR code showed up after they were 35. So it's against the natural order of things. And you don't have to embrace everything, because S. Sharon Matt says, I embrace it unless it's crypto. There are things you don't have to embrace. But like, if it's established, and it's been around for longer than a year, then you know, we always complained, or at least me and the people I went to high school with complained that our parents just didn't understand how anything works. Now they're the people that don't understand, but they defend it because, like, well, because I'm smart. My parents weren't smart, but now I'm smart. So I'm like, okay, you keep that going, that circular logic. Let's talk about what somebody can help you with. If you really, really, really want to have something, but you don't want to go through all the trouble, and it is trouble to put this together, let's talk about Arcade 1-Up. Time Extension reports that Arcade 1-Up, the leading producer of at-home retro arcade machines, is joining up with the household tasks website TaskRabbit to hopefully make it easier than ever to assemble the retro games room of your dreams. As part of this new partnership, TaskRabbit will offer a special service on its website that will let you hire someone to come to your home and assemble your Arcade 1-Up machine or pinball machine for you. This will essentially remove the difficulty of having to put them together yourself, so you can simply look forward to playing the games instead. So David McIntosh, the head of brand and communications at Arcade 1-Up, said, quote, "Listening to our community has always been a top priority at Arcade 1-Up. We understand that the excitement of purchasing a new arcade machine can sometimes be hindered by the assembly process, despite how easy we've tried to make it." Have you tried putting in the monitor? Partnering with TaskRabbit removes the biggest barrier to enjoyment, the setup. We can't wait to see all the amazing home arcades that come about from this partnership, unquote. And then Tamara Rosenthal, who is the vice president of marketing at TaskRabbit, said, quote, Arcade 1UP's innovative products are a perfect match for our assembly services. We pride ourselves in offering a convenient and affordable way to get help at home, so we are thrilled that we can help customers enjoy their Arcade 1UP gaming experience almost immediately, unquote. I hated putting the cabinets together. I actually filmed all three of my Arcade 1UP builds, and I put them on this podcast. And I think some of them are even up on the YouTube channel over at VOG Network. I understand that they're IKEA, and I understand it's probably simple. It's simple IKEA. They're a hassle. The screen is the hardest part. The actual screen, having to get the screen, and it's 16 screws and get it to actually fit into the thing and twist and contort to be able to put the it sucks. And I'm not stupid. I am not dumb. But it was like a 6-hour ordeal. And by the time I had put it together, the last thing I wanted to do was sit and play it. I just wanted to go do something else. So TaskRabbit, if you've never heard of it, it is the gig economy for household contractors is essentially what it is. So you can go to TaskRabbit, and instead of going through the yellow pages and finding a contractor that might be licensed, you can just have somebody come to your house and build your IKEA furniture. Or move things, or, you know, do like light plumbing work or light electrical work. They will come and do things around your house. And it's more of a gig economy type of thing instead of actually finding like a general contractor to come do things around your house. So TaskRabbit, they already do IKEA builds. So you can actually already use TaskRabbit to build something you buy from IKEA. And now they're adding Arcade 1UP. But the thing is, it is gig economy, so I don't know if they're actually like training somebody on this, or if you're going to get somebody that has just as much problem getting the monitor into the cabinet as you. Podculture says my Legends Ultimate Cab was a super easy build. Yeah, some of them are easy, some of them aren't. I think the pinball cabinets from Arcade 1UP are mostly assembled. Like, you don't actually put those together as much as you do an arcade cabinet from Arcade 1UP, which has all the boards and everything, and everything's, you know, kind of piecemeal. So, if you want Arcade 1UPs and you only care about playing them and you don't really care about building them, TaskRabbit can be for you. Esther Man says, kind of surprised Best Buy doesn't offer something similar with this Geek Squad service since they sell plenty of Arcade 1UPs there. The Geek Squad service installs, they do not build. That's the difference. So, you know, a white glove service for an Arcade 1UP, which is really what this is called, a white glove service, is a multiple hour task. Whereas installing a TV and hanging it on your wall is not. They're not building anything. They are just installing. So Geek Squad does installations. They don't build. So, you know, they'll mount your TV to the wall, but they're not going to build your TV. If it was the Heath kit. All right, we're going to take a quick music break, and then we'll talk to OLR and see what's going to be happening on episode 1001 coming up in just a little bit. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here on the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. See, Pokemon came out after all my games were stolen, so that's I still have my original one of that. Welcome back to the show, where I've been chosen. E3VL actually asked in chat, anybody watch the Fallout series on Amazon Prime? Great show. We actually talked about it a little bit last week. I have actually seen the first two episodes now. I believe that everything's just going to go wonderfully for all the characters. Nothing's going to go bad for any of them. Nobody's going to betray anybody. in the next six episodes. I know this in the bottom of my heart. But no, I am really enjoying it, and I am not a lore purist, because I know the lore purists are very upset at the show because of what it does to the timeline of New Vegas. But I am enjoying the show, and hopefully maybe by the next episode, I will probably have finished all the other six episodes, because where everything's going to be just fine. Fifth Dream says, the creator said the thing I did, said the same thing I did last week, unreliable narrators and liars. Because, like, you know, you could say, oh, it messed with the timeline, but, like, was the person who messed with the timeline telling the truth? Esther Matt saying, seeing everyone buy Fallout 4 since the series came out, Todd Howard is excited that he might have found a new way to get people to buy Skyrim. I mean, isn't Fallout 76, like, the number one, or, like, got back into, like, the top 10 games on Steam or something like that? So, and anyway, if the Skyrim television show does not start with, hey, you're finally awake, then what are they even doing? That being said, Fallout never says war, war never changes. So what are they even doing? Coming up next here on the Voice of Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And we like to check in with them to see what's going on in their life. Sacramento, are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Bobby.
How are you doing? What are your memories of the Game Boy?
I remember having the Game Boy as well. I think I got it pretty early on. Tetris was one of the first games I had. I think Alleyway was the other game I kind of got with it. And then it's funny because you brought up Revenge of the Gator. I remember that game very well as well. That was one of the first link cable games I ever played outside of Tetris was Revenge of the Gator. So, I remember that pinball game. Well, I really love the pinball games on the Game Boy because, you know, I said earlier, Pokemon pinball kind of... Pokemon game, but also like much more just a great pinball game. So there's that. And I think on the, was it the Advance that had the Super Metroid one or the Metroid?
Yes, Metroid Prime Pinball.
Too.
Yeah. Well, no, it was the DS, I believe, had Metroid Prime Pinball because it came with the Rumble Pack that went into the Game Boy Advance port.
Right. It's all a blur now.
And that was great too. Like Nintendo's made some really good pinball games. Like, you know. I mean, I know Pokemon is, I don't know which one made Pokemon, which if it was Game Freak or not, the Pokemon Pinball.
I want to say there was a second Pokemon Pinball game too.
Yeah.
Maybe that was the one on the Advance I was thinking of earlier, but it was a solid series.
Yeah. So I loved this thing.
I have a deep story here.
Okay.
One just came to mind. Okay. So another game that I really loved was Super Mario Land. And one thing I loved about Mario Land was the music in the game. It was really well done, you know, and it also an underrated feature we don't talk enough about on the Game Boy was the fact that it was stereo sound in the headset, which was not something that even the NES did at that point. The Super Nintendo did it, but the Game Boy was later. That's right. It was later, and the Game Boy was portable. So, and you were encouraged, you know, you may not notice it as much on a TV, depending on your home sound setup, but you definitely notice when the earbuds or, you know, the headphones are on your ears, you notice that stereo sound, right? And it was very, and especially in the early days of stereo sound, things would play with the stereo noise very heavy. And Mario Land was one of those. Well, around the same time, we were participating in a local competition. I feel like you've probably heard of this before, Bobby. It was something called Odyssey of the Mind.
Okay,
it was So I had a group for that did that. We had to put together this whole thing. For those that don't know what it is, it's like a Nerd Olympics. For grade schoolers and maybe I think I actually went all the way up to high school. I think there were different brackets, but we were in the grade school bracket and we were doing the competition. They rotate the competitions every year, but there's always something about how much weight can you put on a wooden, like a balsa wood structure.
Right.
Or so, that was the one we did. And we had to present it using a sketch. So how does this relate to Game Boy? Because we did an Egyptian themed thing and we used the music from the palace on Super Mario Land. And what I did to do this, I would plug this is like old audiophile me. I would plug the Game Boy into the microphone input, which actually worked this way on my little boombox that I had. And I recorded while playing it. And that's how we got the music. And I let it loop. And I remember there was a little skip in the recording where I had to loop it, and that ended up being like the whip crack or something where the queen was saying move faster with the stacking the thing on the wooden sculpture. So yeah, that's that Super Mario Land music, the early days of getting soundtracks used in my modest Odyssey of the Mind sketch. There you go. Deep, in 1,000 episodes of OLR, I don't think that story has ever come up.
So there you go. And for you can't hear it, but I'm playing the Egyptian king, the Eastern Kingdom.
Oh, there you go.
Theme off for everybody. So yeah, and they're saying flashback is what Fifth Dream is saying.
But and I don't know how it's coming through, but if it's coming through in stereo, like listen to how that. Well, and your podcast might be mono, like ours. But you know, if you're hearing it in stereo, 11, listen to how it like pulls on your ears. It's such a strong stereo presence. A lot of the old Game Boy games were like that, and so yeah. Definitely some interesting soundtracks to go back and listen to with just how much it had to show off stereo, just because they could.
Yeah. And it is, because you can hear, like, in this, what people are hearing is, like, the drums are coming in different sides. So.
Yeah. So, anyway.
We both had a deep cut.
That's my memory.
We had both had a deep cut. I had, you know, everything was stolen.
I had the steal. I had the borrowed and never got back, which I still call stolen. That's what happened to my Castlevania 3 cartridge, which I won in a contest, by the way. Yeah. Another deep story I'll have to tell sometime.
Yeah. But happy birthday to the Game Boy, 35 years old in Japan, not in America yet, but in Japan, April 21st.
Bobby, I don't understand how you have all these Game Boy memories, though, because if the Game Boy is 35 years old and you're only 29.
It's
the math. The math is fine. Math right?
The math is fine. We're on Twitch. Okay. Have you seen Twitch math when people resubscribe?
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
It all works. Yeah.
I see. The math is where they hit the prime sub button. Yes. I see. Okay.
Podcoach says a friend borrowed my NES. Still salty about that. Yeah. No. I did have the one. My one trade that I never got back was a dumb trade on my part. I had for the NES. I had Major League Baseball. So the actual Major League Baseball game, and I traded it with someone for Slalom because I wanted to try Slalom.
Okay.
And he goes like never. Oh yeah, maybe I'll give that back sometime. He never did.
Yeah.
But I still have the instruction manual for Major League Baseball.
So everybody in chat is popping in with their own story about a traded cartridge. Now it's funny, not funny, but kind of humorous that we all share that same story about somebody we knew growing up.
And that can't happen anymore because we're getting rid of physical media.
You don't have to worry about getting your stuff stolen anymore unless it's the company stealing it back,
right?
Like we learned with Ubisoft last week.
Or somebody hacks your account.
Yes. They just pull the servers for the game completely, as if we're going to talk about a little bit later on tonight. Pour one out for a Bobby Blackwolf created level, a legendary Bobby Blackwolf created level in this game. We'll talk about it in a little bit.
All right. Orange Lounge. Anything else you want to talk about tonight on OLR?
How about Nintendo Indie World? We'll do a wrap up of that as well. And some other things that Nintendo is planning, or maybe in this case, not planning, that definitely lends viability to earlier rumors about there is no new hardware this year, because otherwise Nintendo would probably be doing this thing that they've decided to cancel on.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio episode 1001 is up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us, interact with the show directly, and maybe I will actually stop talking early enough to take a call, because apparently there was supposed to be somebody who wanted to call in earlier, and I'm already over time. So apologies to Matt Damon. We'll be back next week. You're welcome, Jimmy Kimmel, for stealing that. Anyway, So I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel. Come join us, interact with the show directly, or you can be on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord, and talk back about this episode, or give us things that you want us to talk about on the next episode. I'm also on social media at Bobby Blackwolf, most everywhere, bobbyblackwolf.com, where the skies are blue. But if you like this show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. And y'all went above and beyond last week. So I am amazed that there's still some left over. Thank you so much. We did get a new follow tonight, Jay Gazmom. Good to see you again. I recognize that name from a while ago. Mike Deft resubscribed Vog Sub 64. We're getting into the N64 era of subs. Orange Wright resubscribed saying 64-bit, 32-bit, 16-bit, 8-bit, 4-bit, 2-bit, 1-bit, half-bit, quarter-bit, the wrist game. I don't know what that's from, but hopefully I did it justice. Rob Roberts resubscribed with Prime. Thank you so much. And Sean 322 cheered 200 bits saying whoop. And we did actually have a hype train. We had a good little hype train tonight. So thank you so much for the support. And Orange Wright says that's from the Angry Video Game Nerd. So something I, no shade to them, no shade to the nerd, never watched. I'm not big on the angry, even though I know, like, he's not actually angry. I know it's I understand character versus person, but it, so I personally didn't get it. And so, because I personally don't watch, but I'm glad that you do. And that is entertaining to you, because that's what we're really here to do, is entertain people. I am also here to hit the buttons so Orange Lounge Radio can entertain you. There they are. So I will see you back again next week. Play a Game Boy game. Figure out a way to play a Game Boy game. They're on Nintendo Switch Online. See you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the Vogue Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom, although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.